Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we'll have that quiz question at 12:30. It's already in. I think it's an easy one if you're, let's say with us for the next half hour, and us would be, in addition to me, the celebrated tenor William Joyner, who is headlining in the Madison Opera's Un ballo in maschera, the great Verdi opera, and the performances take place this Friday, that's October 26th at 8 p.m., Sunday the 28th at 2:30 p.m. at the Overture Center for the Arts. It will be sung in the original Italian, but with the English supertitles. And welcome to the Midday.
Thank you, Norman. Great to be here.
Well, let's see, last time you were in Madison, was back in January, did you say?
That's right.
For Galileo Galilei.
Correct.
And now you have a considerably different project.
Indeed. An opera that I was first acquainted with more than 20 years ago when I sang in the chorus as an apprentice artist at the Sarasota Opera. And it has always been a great love of mine, something that I wanted to do when I grew up.
And so as a tenor, you were sort of looking at that role of Gustav III all along and think that I want to be him?
Certainly had it in the back of my mind as something I wanted to do.
What's so appealing about that role?
I think that Gustav is an incredibly realized human being who has to navigate duty versus personal love, passion, desire, and ultimately fails, but he tries really hard to do the right thing.
Well, failure can certainly be even more dramatically effective than success, can it?
Very often, yes.
And there is an element of a strong element of history behind this opera.
Absolutely true. Based on events that actually happened in Sweden, Gustav III was king for about 20 years after he staged a coup. He took power, amassed a lot of power for himself, making the noblemen disgruntled because he took some of their lands and money, got rid of corrupt judges. He was a very enlightened man who had great goals and achieved very good things. Sometimes, however, when you achieve good things, the people that lose things they had don't like it very much.
Yeah, it's hard not to create enemies. This is not a setting in the remote past. I mean, Verdi was working in the 1850s when he wrote the opera, and the actual historical events take place circa 1790.
Correct.
And so this was still really pretty much, the assassination of a European head of state is a hot topic.
A huge deal. We had opera up close yesterday on the UW campus, and Catherine Smith spoke a lot about Verdi's problems, the librettist problems with the censors. We tend to think of censors as being sort of moralistic things, moralistic police here in our time. These censors were very engaged with protecting the monarchy. That was what it was all about. We think of the French Revolution, but we forget in our time now, so far removed, there were an awful lot of European revolutions throughout the 19th century, 1830, 1848, 1860, 1870. And these people who were in power were terrified that the masses were going to rise up just as they had in Paris in 1789 and topple them. In a few cases, that is, in fact, what happened. But the censors and Verdi's issues with where to set the story, is it going to be a regicide? No, we'll make him a count. No, we better make him a governor. No, we better set it outside of Europe. All of these things came into play as the opera was created.
And Verdi was politically active. Certainly he was a favorite among those who, what shall we say, wanted change.
No question about it. He was involved with the Risorgimento, the resurgence of Italian nationalism to create one country instead of just a whole bunch of small principalities. And there was some talk at time of having him become a prime minister. That never came to fruition, fortunately for him. And there was even the first king of unified Italy, Victor Emmanuel, Re d'Italia, V-E-R-D-I, some people thought was actually supposed to be about Verdi himself.
And the setting of this opera was affected by this political sensitivity. As you mentioned, Bill, it moved around a little bit depending upon the political circumstances.
Absolutely true. It was originally set in Sweden based on the historical events. Censors wanted it moved around the Mediterranean into Pomerania, ultimately, as the piece premiered, it was set in colonial Boston in the 17th century.
Well, that's about as remote as you could get from Italy in
absolutely
the 1850s.
True. And in a number of ways, it's kind of ridiculous. As Christine McIntyre, our director, pointed out, if we set this in Sweden in the as it was originally written, we have a fancy court, an amazing Enlightenment environment, and yet we have this gypsy fortune teller who is perhaps out of place.
In Puritan Boston.
Right. Yeah, but if we move the story to Puritan Boston, then the court doesn't make any sense. The glitter, the trappings, even the masked ball, what we know of Puritans in Boston in 1690 just wouldn't have flown.
Yeah, there are a lot of no-goes in that, aren't there? This is one of the arias from it, and if we set it up a little bit, what would we? What would you, with your insider insights, have to say about this aria?
This is the tenor aria from the third act of Un ballo in maschera, Ma se me forza perderti. Gustavo is singing about his love for Amelia with the understanding that he has to do the right thing. And for me, as I sing this, the line that stands out to me is, Ma se verrai mil palpito, ove qual ciel tu sia, wherever you go, whatever skies underneath you are, my heart, my desire, my heartbeat will be with you.
And here it is as sung by Placido Domingo. An aria from Un ballo in maschera by Verdi, that was Placido Domingo as Gustav III, and that's the part that's being played by my guest, William Joyner, in the upcoming Madison Opera performances of Un ballo in maschera, one on this coming Friday, that's the 26th, at 8, and then the following Sunday, the 28th, at 2:30 at the Overture Center for the Arts. Un ballo in maschera, which I can only imagine has a lot of visuals to it, being about a masked ball, after all.
Quite spectacular, yes.
Now, if you are asked, Bill, how would you recommend a person get into opera? I mean, as a listener, what would you say about Verdi?
Well, I think Verdi was an absolute master of capturing true human emotion and true human drama. Perhaps the most moving scene that I can think of all of Verdi's works is the confrontation between Germont and Violetta in Traviata. And when that whole scene, 20-minute long scene, he's appealing to her sensibilities to help him save his daughter so that she can have a good marriage. And Violetta understands because of her own life history and story. And when she sings Amami Alfredo at the end of that scene and runs away, leaving Alfredo heartbroken and not understanding anything that just happened to him, I will never forget my daughter, my older daughter, who was 7 at the time. I was doing a production of this down in Florida. And she came backstage after that scene weeping. And I was so concerned. I said, Maddie, what's the matter? What's wrong? She said, I loved it. It was so beautiful. So trust Verdi to know how to depict what really happens to human beings. Trust him to touch our inner sensibilities about ourselves, and know that he's right. I think Verdi is phenomenal at capturing the true essence of humanity.
And not bad with a tune either.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Back with more about Verdi and Un ballo in maschera and my guest today, William Joyner, in a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And back with William Joyner, who's Gustav III, King of Sweden, in A Masked Ball, a story of political and emotional turmoil in the world of Verdi, and one of the greats of 19th century opera, an opera that came to this country pretty quickly, by the way. I mean, within a couple of years.
Exactly. The New York premiere was 1861.
And that says something about it right there. It was very popular here, too. Opera in America in the 19th century is a story all its own, isn't it?
Indeed.
The lengths to which the impresarios would go and the lengths to which the patrons would go to show up to this.
We can't forget that Lorenzo da Ponte, Mozart's librettist, was also touring throughout the U.S. in the early part of the 19th century.
Yes, he came over here in large measure to flee his creditors, but who cares about that? It's the artistry that's the important thing. Now, this being Verdi, you about have to have a love triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And the love triangle involves King Gustav, and then the wife of an associate.
Correct. The character of Renato, the baritone in this opera, is sort of, if you will, the prime minister of Sweden. There's no official title given in the story, but he serves as counsel, friend, advisor, protector for King Gustav for the first two acts of the opera until tragedy strikes, mistaken tragedy, as it turns out. Amelia, his wife, and Gustavo have declared their love for each other, but not consummated their love. This is very important.
Especially an Italian opera in the 19th century.
And the conspirators who want to take their money and power and lands back from Gustav reveal to Renato that Gustav's secret lover, quotation lover, is in fact Renato's wife.
It's a setup.
That's a setup. And so at the top of the third act of this piece, we are in Renato's home, and it's a knockdown, drag-out argument between husband and wife. The act begins with her saying, "I'm sorry, you don't quite get the picture. I have to follow my heart, but I didn't betray you." And he says, "I don't really care. 82, it was you who broke my heart." Now, the fascinating and fantastic thing that Verdi does with this piece, as he does with many others like Cortigiani in Rigoletto, there are two sides to this aria. The first half of it is very dramatic and powerful and driving and loud with brass and full woodwinds. But about halfway through, the tone shifts and he starts talking about his hopes and dreams that are now shattered, and all we have is harp and flute. Gentle, gentle accompaniment for this emotionally destroyed man.
And in this case, the emotionally destroyed man will be sung by bass baritone Cheryl Milnes. This from Verdi's Un ballo in maschera.
More, more, more.
And that's the way Cheryl Milnes interprets that role of the jealous husband who goes through all the emotions of suspicion and jealousy in Verdi's Umballo and Mascara. Is it hard for you to, Bill, to record or to sing an aria out of context like that?
I think it can be. But I'm sure that Cheryl Milnes had sung this role many, many times and was able to recall everything he needed to do emotionally to prepare himself to be in the right place to perform.
But then there's also the role, of course, of the audience.
Indeed.
And you play off of the audience?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Each performance is a little different from the one before, I think even more in opera than in music in general, I would think.
Which is a huge part of why I have always wanted to be a musician. My father was a lawyer, and I couldn't imagine reading books and having to do the same types of things every single day. And the fact that live theater is never the same is hugely appealing to me.
Well, I'd say break a leg, but you actually have a more dire fate.
Indeed. Shot in the back.
And I'm sure that takes its toll on the acting chops also.
Well, we want to make it as realistic as possible.
And if you want to find out how William Joyner and cast pull it off, one way to do it would be there Friday night. This Friday night, October 26th, 8 o'clock at the Overture Center for the Arts, or Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And it will be sung in Italian, but with those English super titles, which seem to work really well.
Absolutely.
Especially if everybody sings slowly enough.
Well, there's nothing worse, in my opinion, than having to sing music written in a foreign language with those linguistic sensibilities in a translation that doesn't quite fit what the music says.
Yeah, I mean, it's an art form in its own right, isn't it?
Indeed.
A graceful translation to be read by an audience while they're watching the opera. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more from William Joyner and Gustav III and company and in Umballo and Mascara. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Norman. Appreciate it.